Yeah, that's the reality, and we'll go away disappointed and frustrated. Of course we will. But in terms of the performance and what the lads gave on the pitch, you know, I've got no complaints. I thought for large periods of that game, we were dominant. We created a lot of chances. But it's quite clear why we're out the cup, because we got one moment wrong. We haven't defended the second phase from a set piece, three out there, 6 yards out, and we haven't took our chances at the other end. So in terms of the performance, yeah, it was good, but unfortunately not good enough. So it's nearly at the moment. We're close, but it's nearly, and there's a gap. And, you know, me and the players need to fill that gap and get that right.
That they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our... Chaps.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vital Village Show. I opened this show just then with a sense of, in terms of the way I spoke just then, of happiness and enjoyment, and be sure that that is just a mask. That is a complete mask in terms of my inner feelings being of anger and frustration. Bear in mind that Manchester United unjustly won last night 1-0 against Aston Villa, and I've gone to school today. Bear in mind that I take part in education, and I've spoken to loads of my friends who are supporters of many, many clubs, and they give their views, and a man's views I'm interested the most in, realistically, about what happened last night and what went down was the Fear. Jonathan Fear, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, yourself?
All good. Well, realistically, as I said in the intro just then, angry, really. It's diffused now. Bear in mind that it's pretty much close to 24 hours after the game. That's when we're recording it. But just because I know you sent me that video of your post-match reaction, but how have you changed in terms of your viewpoint on the game that happened last night?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really. And I must admit, and people on the forum and social media that have known me for years will know, I very rarely criticise the referees, because I think the referees have got a difficult job and everything's done so quickly, and the players do cheat a lot more, I think, than they used to. And so they're conning us. But last night I was apoplectic, and my video probably showed that, although I tried to be calm. And then I got to a certain stage on social media and on the forum where I thought, actually, I'm not going to be able to add anything intelligent, and I don't think anybody else could. So I switched off and had a rum, which is rarely a good idea, or a very good idea, depending on your outlook. It felt corrupt to me. Alan Shearer said it right on at the end of the match, that you either have all of the teams with VAR or none of them. So, you know, there's a problem with that. I can understand the arguments for using it for the clubs that have got it, but it doesn't seem right to me. But if you look at the referee and what he did, he was bang in line for the foul that he could have. If there was any foul where their player, I forget his name, I can't pronounce his name, ran into Ramsey. If that was a foul, he was looking right at it. And as Gary Lineker again, so this isn't us being biased. Gary Lineker tweeted after, they seem determined to find a reason not to allow it to be a goal. And that just screams corruption. And I'm not that sort of conspiracy theory type. I like to give the referees an easy go, because it's a stinker of a job, and we all shout and abuse, and I wouldn't want to do it. But I think they robbed, not that we have to worry about the neutrals, we've been robbed of a chance of a cup run in the FA Cup, the cup. But I think they also robbed the neutral, because they were watching that, and actually for once it was living up to the hype of an FA Cup clash of two Premiership teams. Same as you spoke to mates today, I spoke to numerous people that wouldn't leave me alone. And every time I started to get calm again, I got angry. And it wasn't talking to fellow Villa fans. It was talking to like neutrals. And they said the same. They felt robbed of a good game that could have gone maybe to extra time, maybe to penalties. That's what they wanted to see. And instead of talking about, actually, we played really well last night, and I don't like to be a spoiled fan of we lost and let's look for the reasons why we should be up in arms. Sometimes you just lose to a better team. We didn't last night, and it stinks.
It really does. I completely agree with what you said there. And the thing is as well, I was watching many videos of popular creators in regards to football, their viewpoints on it. I think the main point coming from that, in terms of adding to what you've already said, was the fact that it's just a matter of it being 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes of time that they spent looking at this footage in terms of VAR. That completely took away Aston Villa's momentum. Like, we're really pushing forward in the game. We're attacking, something that Sir Alex Ferguson really prided himself on in terms of what he was a Man United manager, was the fact that their attacking talents would constantly be a threat to the opposition. And that's what we did. That's what we did throughout that period in the game. And that was completely stopped by the fact that that decision took so long to be decided. That's what really frustrated me as well.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the players want that as well. But when you're at the games, and I think sometimes these, you know, the Premier League and all that with their massive contracts and things, I think they forget that this is a sport. And some of us actually go to the games. I don't want to go to a game. I wasn't there last night. Fine, I'm watching it on telly. But, I mean, we go again on Saturday. I don't want to have to celebrate and then stop myself celebrating and think, is it going to be a graph now? Or is it going to be 4 minutes of looking at videos? Do I then celebrate again if they allow it? You've got the stupidity now of, and we do the same, when the goal is disallowed, like the Man United fans last night celebrated a disallowed goal. And you just start to think, well, is this football? Is this going to become some sort of computer simulation game? Or is it worth going to live games if that's what they're going to do? And the answer, slowly but surely, in my mind, is, and they're not ripping it away from me, but it's kind of no, it isn't. You know, I sometimes sit there at the game now and literally wait to celebrate until I'm told it's a goal. That's not proper sport. That's not what we grew up with, and that's not what any of us expect. There's something really, really wrong. But last night's is more than a debate about VAR. I think VAR should be limited, time limited. If you can't tell within a couple of minutes, at the very most, whether it's a goal or not, then it's a goal. Or just get rid of it because it stinks. But last night's 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes, something like that, to check. Well, they were checking whether it was offside. You kind of look and you think, well, I understand why they're checking that. And then there was a question, was it handball? But it wasn't handball. That should have been it. And you kind of got the feeling that we're going to rewind the whole of the game and maybe into a previous game, and maybe all the way back to 1957 to find some match where Villa did a foul to disallow that. You know, they showed you before the game, Peter McParlan going, you know, clashing with their goalkeeper in the 57 final. My dad kept banging on about, I was there. You just felt like they were going to go back to that and retrospectively maybe give McParlan a red card, and right, so the goal last night couldn't count. I know I'm talking ridiculous, but that's the stage the game's got to now. It's almost like rewind to the point of, right, Villa definitely don't get that goal. If you read in years to come, and I've got to be careful how I say this, I'm not accusing anyone, but if you read, well, I probably, yeah, I'm going to be careful with this, but you get betting syndicates and you get talk of match fixing and all that sort of thing in all different sports, and I'll leave it at that.
No, that's
fair. We don't want to go to court.
I mean, there's many conspiracy theories that you could take and hold as your own viewpoint in terms of what happened last night. But if you look at the playing style and you look at the positives, because we focus just then primarily on negatives and VAR and the inconsistency and how the level of refereeing in England especially is, to put it lightly, woeful. Really, really bad. But if you look at the positives to that game and look at how Aston Villa played, I was proud of the team. I really was. And yes, that VAR decision really took out the momentum. But for the majority of the game, we really played some nice football. And it's just a shame that it was one mistake at the start of the game that meant that we couldn't go and try and challenge further in that.
I think you're right. And it gives you the positives of moving forward. And it's very difficult after a decision like that to sort of look at the positives and talk about them. And that's what we should be talking about. But it's not positive losing a game in that way. And yet it was a really, really sloppy goal that we gave away. And you could pick the bones out of whose fault it is. Is it, you know, collective fault? I know Ezra looked really, really unhappy and went like that as if to say somebody else should have been there by his side. But all in all, and we can talk about Man United are in disarray, but nevertheless, we played really well, and we've got to remember that. And we go into the game at the weekend, remembering we've already beaten them once. We arguably were robbed last night, and we should be able to go in with plenty of confidence, especially as you assume that Coutinho, Coutinho is probably going to make a debut. We might have a new left back by then. Who knows? There's a lot to be excited about, and I like even down to what Gerrard said at the end of the match. He wasn't making excuses about anything, and he said we're nearly there, but nearly isn't close enough, and all that sort of thing. The bloke is an out and out winner. I don't think he came out with any excuses, or not in the video that I saw, the interview I saw. I don't know whether he's reacted to the controversy at all. Have you seen anything?
No, he hasn't. But what I saw in terms of that, in terms of VAR, it's kind of now become like a theatrical side of the game, something that should be taken so seriously in the fact that VAR is there to help the officials make sure that it's a fair game, has been taken in a more theatrical way by fans because it's so inconsistent. At the start of the game, just to go off your point just briefly, Steven Gerrard, all the Man United fans are booing him. And you picked up on a word there, winner especially, despite the fact that VAR lets us down, the referees are inconsistent. We can have all these excuses, but if we continue in the manner that we are and the way that Gerrard presents himself, and let me go back to this point, at the start of the game, Man United fans are booing him. He walked out, and what he did simply was just turn around and just look at them all. And that, just a simple act like that, just shows that, again, he's a born winner. He knows how to face difficult times and make sure that those in the future will become positive. He's the right man to go from this really unfortunate circumstance last night to take us forward and potentially try and challenge United again on Saturday and get something out from that game. So we can talk about the inconsistencies, etc., of VAR and all these different technologies and personnel who are involved in the refereeing of our game. But the most important thing is that we have the right man, like you said, to lead us forward.
We do, yeah. I'm excited by it. I mean, you know, we've talked a number of times on people on the forums, and my line when I did the Sky Sports sort of reaction was not underwhelmed, not overwhelmed, just really, really intrigued on what it can bring. And you've got to let these young managers through. And there weren't any experienced sort of names screaming out. There was no one that really pushed to the front. And as soon as he was mentioned, I kind of thought, yeah, I quite like it. I'm intrigued by this. I'm now starting to edge towards, not overwhelmed, I'm a bit too long in the tooth for that, but I'm really excited and I believe in him. And I haven't believed in a manager for a very long time. In fact, it's quite embarrassing looking back at the amount of managers that we've had that I really haven't believed in, because I'm not a great hater, you know, I'm really not. And I don't do much of this sort of this manager out, that manager out. I sort of always went for owners and all that sort of thing, but not managers. But I think he's been so smart, so savvy. I said to you in, was it the previous podcast, he's going to win us the FA Cup. I just know he's a winner, and some of it's wishful thinking and some of it is praying. But I think he understands more than a lot of managers that would tinker around because of the league, that actually what would galvanise this club now is not just taking part and not just getting to a final. It's getting some silverware and some excitement back. We can then get the belief and the momentum. Players that we're trying to attract will believe that we're winners, because we will be. I think we'll give it a damn good go anyway, and that's all I can ask for. Whereas before, he always felt that it was sort of, we'll go and play that game, but we don't really think we can beat them, and we want to be ninth in the league, or, you know, all that sort of rubbish that does come with modern football.
Yeah, I'm loving it too. I mean, in terms of a tactical aspect, because we could talk again about how we enjoy a man of this character at the helm. But in terms of what he does tactically, and like we've said time and time again, there's a board behind him in terms of Gary McAllister, Michael Beale, who help him in that aspect. But tactically last night, and what we've seen throughout in terms of the development of it, is that 1-2 touch football, just simply creating space, of being so self-aware and having that presence on the pitch and having that spatial awareness to see where there are gaps in the field. And bear in mind that Man United aren't, definitely not, the best side in the Premier League, nowhere near that, in fact. So therefore, we know there's insecurities and weaknesses within there. And I just felt that the only thing missing last night was a goal, because we did everything right apart from that.
We did, and you can see what they're trying to do now. For ages, we've played some, you know, sporadically some quite nice looking football. And, you know, the record under Smith, he got us up and he consolidated, and, you know, we've won games and things. But at times I'd be looking and thinking, what are they trying to achieve here? Whereas now you can see what the passes are trying to do. And he wants the ball forward really quickly. And you can tell that by the fact he's gone and got Coutinho. We're being linked with a left back that's, I believe he's more a wing back. He reading his stats and things, he looks like he's great on the assists. And that's exactly what we need. I mean, I've banged on about it for ages. We get great strikers. We then don't get them the ball. So we need to get supply. And it looks like that's what Gerrard is all about. Use them as wing backs, use two number 10s, get the ball forward, pass it about nicely, all about the triangles and all the different shapes and all the different bits and bobs. You can do that in all the different bits of the pitch, but the only place you're going to score is when you get it forward and get the ball through, play it through the defenders, as opposed to the defenders having the back, the strikers having the back to the defenders all the time. I can see what Gerrard's doing, and it's exciting, and it might take another season for it all to fully click. This season might now just be transitional, and let's hope we have lots of enjoyable games during this transition. But they seem to be picking up on it quite quickly, and I'm sure bringing in Coutinho has given them all a spring in the step. I wouldn't be surprised to see them possibly look to galvanise the central defence as well. That might not be until the summer. And maybe another right back. You know, it's positive, isn't it? You know, you can see that all of a sudden we are seriously trying to get to the next tier within the Premiership.
Well, being self-aware in any form of life is important, but especially in football, where you have an ownership who are not only looking to build on the foundations that Gerrard has built in this short period in bringing in Coutinho, Luca Dean, apparently, Darren Randolph as a backup. I don't think that's happening now, but players of that caliber to fit in certain places to correct this squad morale. But they're supposedly bringing in this young lad from the Scottish leagues. He's about 17, he's a defender. So then again, that whole element of becoming self-aware comes into that. Bear in mind that they're looking not just for the now, but for the future as well, in continuing to bring this style of play to the Premier League and different tournaments to get Villa so far, but looking for the future and bringing in players like Philogene Badace and Carney and Archer and this young lad from Scotland to all contribute to what should be a fantastic period for Aston Villa.
Yeah, and as you say, this young lad, I mean, I've forgotten his name, and I think you have as well, but he's reported, if we get him, the fee would end up about £2 million if you look at all the add-ons, and the add-ons would obviously only come if he breaks through, but he looks another one that's sort of so fancied by so many clubs. And we're obviously impressing these youngsters to get them into the academy, to show them, right, there are the chances then to break into the first team. Not like Cahill years ago, we've discussed before, got so close, was the great product, the greatest product that the academy at that stage had done. And they used that word. I had a contact there and they were gutted that, you know, they got him through exactly what their remit was. And then we offloaded him just at the time where he should have been getting in. So we seem to have been able to convince the youngsters that they're the next step for the club, and our owners, I know, want to make us more sustainable. You know, you can't keep going and trying to get 30, 40, 50, 60 million pound players. It might prove in a few years' time to be hyperbole, but this could be the next golden generation. And they're all used to play, you know, the current winning youth academy team, and the under 23s and all that sort of thing. They're used to playing with each other. So they've got that understanding, the telepathy, if you like, of where they're going to run. Whereas when we bring the new players in, like Buendia and all that, he's still having to get used to where's Watkins going to be, where's Ings going to be, and, you know, Coutinho will be the same. It's sort of, they've all got to get on the same wavelength. The youngsters are already on that wavelength. It's fantastic.
And in comparison to a team like Manchester United, who are renowned for success, the way that their squad is built, it looks a shambles, realistically. And I'm not going to ask you to briefly bring your viewpoint to the case in terms of how you think Man United are, because this is primarily a Villa podcast. I know the listeners will be primarily focused on our thoughts on Aston Villa, but just briefly in terms of comparing ourselves to them, they're a shambles, the way their club is ran. The people in their hierarchy, in terms of Ed Woodward and co, don't know how to create a successful football club. And most importantly, the word that I've used time and time again in this episode, they're not self-aware of how Man United are perceived in fan bases now. Bear in mind that they're almost a joke in the way they are.
Yeah, around. I mean, I know their fans are sort of grumbling at the stadium is, it's not exactly crumbling, is it? But it's sort of not being kept up to date and developed, and new licks of paint and all these little things that we notice. Mm. And then they've got a lot of individual players, not a team. They don't seem to be bringing through that many youth players. They can't settle on a manager, which was always going to happen, wasn't it? Once, you know, the old master went, and he went at the right time. He knew what he was doing. He'd take them as far as he could. He wasn't of an age to build the next generation to come through. But no one's been able to match him, and they do look a pale shadow. And they will obviously be looking at what Man City have done, which the amount of money that they've spent, Man City is just obscene. No one can keep up with a team backed like that by a country, basically, isn't it? My heart doesn't bleed for Man United or for the fans, especially their travelling fans. Not a big fan of them and their behaviour. It's about time we saw like the empire go and crash. But it is quite interesting watching, and their owners, obviously, they just ladled it with debt and didn't really, you know, I don't think they really care what they've got, apart from the fact they've got a big brand. That's all they wanted. Our owners look like they're taking far more care, and, you know, hopefully we'll look back in years to come and they'll have an end game. They're not doing it for the love of claret and blue, but they're putting plenty of love and plenty of attention into it, and that's all as fans we can ask for from owners.
Well, in terms of another industry that's well liked by an audience and society is films, and most sequels aren't great. I mean, I can name many to you right now, but the thing is that we can have our sequel in playing Manchester United at Villa Park on Saturday. So that's a promising sight. And if I was to give you this question right now, would you change anything in terms of how Villa played? Would you change anything in terms of the people in the squad? Would you bring someone in, bring someone out? Would you make subtle changes to improve the way that we face them in terms of trying to get a result from that game?
Yeah, I mean, if he's fit and if he's ready, then I can't see that you're not going to start with Coutinho. Therefore, someone's going to make way, and I would imagine making way. I would be playing Ings because I think Ings, given the chance, takes the chance. Watkins yesterday, arguably, and Shearer said he would know. He should have scored that chance. He hit the crossbar, which he's done a few times. But nevertheless, the work rate he puts in, I think it's going to be one or other of them that will make way for Coutinho. I can't see him trying to segue Buendia, Coutinho, Ings, and Watkins. I do like the look of Sanson. I think he's getting better and better, but who would you drop? Of course, McGinn's out. So would Sanson come in for McGinn, perhaps? The defence, you're not really going to change it unless would we get the new signing in on time? Maybe. Then there's an argument for straight in at left back. I think that's about it. Your keeper is just world class. You're not going to change him. And he proved that last night. What a fantastic player he is, because Gerrard didn't decide to rest him and put Jed Steer in. He obviously knew the importance of being solid at the back. Sadly, one of our defenders didn't, or a few of the defenders didn't. I don't want to name skate particularly, I don't think.
That's fair enough. That is fair enough.
So now I don't think you'd make major changes, because you want these players to go on fresh and angry at what happened, because they all know they've been robbed. But you can't not put Coutinho in, I think. What about yourself?
Well, firstly, if I was to go through the team like yourself, you just did, I think Martinez stays, obviously. He's superb. At the back, stays how it is, because there's no depth there currently. We're looking into investing into that area. But in terms of the fact that we have Target, I mean, Digne won't be signed by then, so he'll have to keep his place. He's got so much potential, and he just keeps improving. That international experience of Poland as well, that goes under the radar, but that does him the world of good in terms of building himself as not just a footballer, but as a character, in terms of experiencing these new things in his life. I think Mings, wasn't bad yesterday. I think he was okay. I think Konsa didn't have one of his better games, but he'll look to bounce back against Man United on Saturday again. In terms of midfield, you said McGinn's out. I think Luiz has been doing a good job being just that instrumental midfielder in there, just creating stuff, being defensive, and just all round being a promising asset.
Possibly my man of the match yesterday, yeah. unless you go with the referee.
Well, that is a fair point. But I think Douglas Luiz, yeah, I think he is underrated. He's a good midfielder, and he's not what Man City wanted him to be in terms of being world-class and a Rodri or a Gundogan. But he's good for us in terms of helping us create this unit, this squad, which is something that Manchester United don't have, as you alluded to, in terms of being a team of individuals. But in terms of being in that midfield area, I would have Douglas. I would have Jacob Ramsey, of course. He is so, so good. He is phenomenal. And I think, I was speaking to my friends about him. And bear in mind that they have no interest in Aston Villa's youth academy and the players that come through it. But bear in mind, when Jacob Ramsey's performing game in, game out, they're really noticing the fact that he's such a promising asset for us and is so good going forward and a real threat for Manchester United. So you've got to have him in the squad.
Imagine how much he'd cost as well to bring in if we were trying to buy him now as a player.
No, exactly. I completely agree. And we've got his brother on the go as well. It's like the Bellingham brothers at Birmingham City. Jude's gone to play for Dortmund, and they're now bringing Job in. And he's been a promising asset. So bear in mind that with Jacob Ramsey's developing at a fast pace. Aaron's gone out to Cheltenham Town now, but he surely should follow in the same suit. So in terms of the years to come, he's a good talent. So we've got Jacob Ramsey, you've got Douglas Luiz. And John McGinn, in terms of his absence, what he brought to the game at Man United and what he always brings is that energy, that just positive, terrier-like play in terms of always chasing the ball and being that middle ground. For Douglas Luiz, he's more defensive and Jacob Ramsey is more attacking. He's almost there to fill in the gaps and his energetic play, and bear in mind that Joe's pushing him forward, that's what's making him even more promising threat. And he has a few shots at De Gea that were really promising. So you've got to find someone who can do that play, and I think Sanson could be that man. You've got to give him that chance, because I think that he's been unfairly criticised in the fact that he hasn't been given those constant games to play and try and prove himself, because he's been coming off the bench a few times, and that's just not enough of a player.
The injuries have spoiled his momentum so far, but as you're alluding to, we can't write these players off.
No, exactly. And I think he will be a good threat, because we've seen him at Marseille as well. I watched a few games at Marseille and I thought he was really good. So I think he can be the player we want him to be. And even his little feature against Chelsea in the League Cup when we went out with our youngsters, I thought he was good then. And he only played for about 30 minutes, but played in a way that we wanted to him to. But up front, I know you're a big fan of Danny Ings, but in terms of being that solo striker, he's there waiting for chances to happen, and we don't necessarily give those to him. We're almost a squad up front where we make stuff of our own. Bear in mind
that that's what Buendia and Coutinho would surely be the ones.
No, exactly. No, I completely agree. But
create the chances, and then when if you were looking at him and Watkins, and I'm a big fan of Watkins as well. I assume it'll only be one. Whichever starts, I'm a big fan of them. But if you were looking at them, if they were one on one with the keeper, which one would you put your money on to definitely be scoring?
Right now, in terms of confidence, and I know you won't like this, but I think Watkins right now, currently.
But he was in front. Yeah, Ings scored last night, taken away from us. Watkins had his chance and hit the crossbar. So I know a lot of Villa fans don't seem to be a big fan of Ings. I'm finding it.
No, it's not. It's really not interesting. Bad.
No, I not directed just at you.
No, of course.
On my site that think we shouldn't have brought him, and that like, I just don't see how you wouldn't buy a player like that, but then get the service and away you go.
No, sharing those viewpoints that he shouldn't have been brought is really stupid, because he is a proven goal scorer. I just think tactically, bear in mind of Dean Smith, we had Grealish, but we didn't have that creativity. So a man of Watkins is elk. Bear in mind, he's come in from the Championship grinding, Exeter City, grinding. He comes to the Premier League, and he's not just going to wait for chances. He's going to try and create stuff for himself. So in terms of changing from a Dean Smith system to a Gerrard system, where it's those two number 10s, really, on the wings. So you have your Coutinhos, you have your Buendias, who will come inside and then pass it to Ings to score. So it's about adapting again to that. And we're only in the foundations phase as well with Gerrard's play. So really it's about helping those attacking players suit that system for then Ings to score more goals, which he obviously will if that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, Buendia and him seem to be getting an understanding. I mean, that beautiful turn straight to Ings. Ings sort of slams it in. Do you then take him out and all of a sudden Buendia, who looks great at times and completely lost at other times, is then trying to find sort of, you know, well, where's he? Where, you know, I haven't seen so much of Buendia to Ollie as I have Buendia and Ings trying to, like, match up. I mean,
that's a fair point.
But it's a great debate as well, isn't it? And all of a sudden, we've got options. For years, it was like, well, who's going to come off the bench if one of our strikers is injured? And the answers were sort of, well, nobody. All of a sudden, Gerrard has got sort of options. And who's to say that in the summer he won't? Well, probably won't go for another target because we've got our youngsters coming through as well, haven't we? But how nice it is to be able to discuss, you know, would you play Ings? Yeah, I'd probably play Ings. Would you play what? Well, actually, if Watkins plays, that's great as well. Mm. Before it was always like, well, if he's not fit, we're buggered. So, you know, we're moving forward, aren't we? It's fun. It's a lovely debate to be able to be talking about this sort of thing and which is your favourite player and all that, as opposed to the club could go bust or let's get rid of that manager. This is nice football talk, if you like.
Well, let's not forget Cheese Strings Bailey, who's injured at the moment, but he will come back at some point. And that's the frustrating thing. I call him Cheese Strings Bailey because his tendons are made out of cheese strings. He's such a talented footballer, but as soon as he pulls up, he's out for a month or two. That's the frustrating thing. So when he's back fully fit, what? We've got Buendia, we've got Ings, we've got Watkins, we've got Coutinho, we've got Bailey, if he stays around, which I don't think he will. We've got El Ghazi, we've got Trezeguet. So in terms of just depth,
and Traoré
again. Yeah. There's so much depth to that attacking area. I just think we have probably, to replicate that.
Probably, as you're sort of saying, like with Alga, you know, there's probably too many now. And I'm the same as you. Yeah. I fear Bailey. I mean, when you keep pulling up and getting hamstring injuries, when your game is based on speed, it's a big worry, isn't it? I mean, Michael Owen, his was intelligence, but he was a quick lad. And I saw him interviewed and he said his career went backwards from bursting on the scene really quick, scoring great goals, and slowly but surely it's just, you know, injury after injury.
Is that about intelligence as well in terms of timing those runs and being able to get in behind a team, not all the time in terms of exerting so much energy that you almost run out and get injured in circumstances like Bailey's found himself in, but having that intelligence as Owen gained throughout his career to time those runs perfectly?
Yeah, I think you have to learn, don't you? And that's sort of learning the hard way sometimes, that not every time do you have to. It's like we've talked about before, that the great players sometimes make the simplest of passes. And I think someone like Bailey, when he came off the bench and he wowed us and the skills looked great, when he started games, he looked like he was wanting to wow every single minute of the game. And actually, the game isn't like that. And if he's going to continually accelerate, decelerate, you know, then you're going to be putting strains on those muscles. But who knows? I can't think of what his age is, but he's not sort of an old player. And mid-20s, is he? So it might just be that it's been unfortunate. And then once you get a run of games, when you come off the bench cold, it can't be very easy to be a fast player and try and get up to speed of the game. You know, fingers crossed he's not injury prone, not just for the fact that we've bought him. You know, it ruins careers as well. I mean, look at Andre Green. He was never able to stay fit. And I thought he was a great prospect when he first burst onto the scene. It's partly how you look after yourself. And I've heard some of the former players, some of the older players argue that some of these modern ones, they want to be built up like men's health models, which is all like well and good and nice, but once you start carrying a certain amount of muscle, you know it's down to the technical side of life. Then it's fast twitch and slow twitch muscles. You carry more weight. You see it with the boxers and UFC fighters, that some of them are explosive like the 100 meter sprinters, you try and get them to do an 800 meters. So it is some of them are a little bit too finely tuned, I think, and maybe sometimes you've got to sort of let go of some of the muscle and learn to adapt your diet and your training. And of course, we've got world class sporting experts, and we've got a fantastic gym setup now. So, you know, none of this is going to be rocket science to them.
Well, intelligence, as I said, is something that you can inhabit and have during your career as it goes on. And in terms of Aston Villa's season progressing, Man United Saturday is such an important fixture. So I just want to get, before we go, your prediction for that game. How do you think it'll go? What do you think will happen? And most importantly, in terms of numbers, what's your prediction?
Yeah, I mean, Villa Park is going to be obviously packed out, and the fans are up for this because of what happened this week. So it's going to be a nice, loud Villa Park, which is, you know, fantastic. Given predictions, we don't always do it the easy way, so I'll go for a 2-1 to Villa. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, they've got nothing to lose. It's a team that are above them, and on paper, apparently, are meant to beat us. But, you know, we've already won once. We got robbed last night. We should go in full of confidence. And, of course, we should be having the debut of a world-class player for us all to look and wow at. How do you see it?
I think 2-1's a respectable scoreline in terms of Aston Villa winning that game. And it's not necessarily a respectable scoreline, but a scoreline that could potentially happen, because Villa will go into that game with a lot of confidence. I think Michael Richards said that post-match yesterday, because they played so well. I think Joe will try and emphasise that point and get the squad prepared and ready for this game in terms of just retelling them, telling them over and over again. They played really well. They were energetic and really played Gerrard's system to its best. It was just a matter of circumstances as they happened, really preventing them from trying to get something out of that game in terms of VAR killing the momentum, Man United continually fouling our players, getting yellow cards, and we can't do anything from that. That kills momentum. We have to start again, and again. So there's those dark arts of football that prevented us from going into extra time and penalties or even winning that game yesterday. So I think we'll get our revenge. I think 2-1 prediction, Aston Villa.
And of course, we'll have they'll have the crowd behind them here. Mm. The referee will have the crowd on his back if they start to give any sort of sloppy decisions. And it does affect them. I mean, they're only humans. And I think they'll get pelters if they do anything quite like they did on Monday. So, yeah, it's all positive. The only thing that then gets worrying is when we start to get positive. That's the main thing to worry about. It's the hope that kills you. But no, I can't wait. Can't wait to get back down.
But in terms of the crowd backing you as well, last night, man of the match choice, I know you talked about this as well, Dion Dublin, lovely bloke. Not the best pundit in the world, not the worst, but he just comes across as a nice bloke, and he's a brilliant co-commentator. I like him, I respect him. But when you pick Scott McTominay for the man of the match, and then the commentator goes, I think the crowd are happy with that. Of course the crowd are happy with that, because they're Manchester United fans, you numpty, to put it lightly. What are you talking about? McTominay wasn't the best player last night. In terms of watching Man United against Wolves, against Burnley, it's one of his better performances, but he wasn't man of the match, because Villa dominated that game. And for someone like John McGinn to not be given that award is a disgrace.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was farcical. And I'm the same. I like Dion Dublin. And he lives in Stratford. I know a few people that know him and say he's, you know, genuinely, well, I think he still lives there. I don't know where he lives now, does it? But, you know, genuinely nice fella. I think he rambled on a little bit too much last night in co-commentary. But, you know, there you go. I did see him this morning doing up houses and thought, actually, that, you know, that was quite good. I don't know why I flicked the telly on. What's it called? Homes Under the Hammer.
Yes, yeah.
But to give a Man United player man of the match, I mean, yeah, he scored the goal, big deal. But I thought Luiz last night was great. I'd have given it to him, or the video assistant.
It's most importantly now important to convert this frustration, anger, into energy and all-round just positivity. So I look forward to reconvening with you at a later date in terms of talking about Man United Villa at Villa Park. And once again, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed it. And let's hope it's a nice, positive one next week. And no referee balls ups and all that sort of thing. We want to talk about the football, win, lose or draw. You know, you want it to be a level playing field, don't you?
Well, please, if you enjoyed this chat, make sure you follow us on your local podcast provider. We've got a YouTube channel, we've got a website, we've got a Twitter page. Make sure you follow us on all those different social media platforms. But most importantly, as we always say, stay safe, stay well, and up for now.